it's a call. It's an open call, right? Everyone is welcome to join. It's equally good for customers, for partners. There's Microsoft folks in there, so welcome everyone. What we're going to be talking about today is all public information. So no NDA is going to be discussed here. So please, even if you want to ask a question on that in IM, we will probably ask you to talk to your Microsoft account team. That session is recorded, and the material will be posted at aka.ms/Azure Networking Friday. It should be posted maybe later today or early next week. So the agenda for today is, first of all, we're going to be talking a little bit of an overview of Azure Networking, and then we'll have with us our guest speaker this week with from the Azure CAT team, is Richard Carpenter, as well as Megaport, who's going to be our partner spotlight of the week. And after that, we'll have an open Q&A, and feel free to ask your questions as we go in the IM. I have colleagues or myself, if I'm not talking, I'll try to respond as well, but my colleagues should be able to answer there too. And the next session was originally scheduled to be on November 25th. We've decided to postpone it on December 2nd due to the fact that the day before is U.S. Thanksgiving, which because I'm based in Canada, I guess I didn't think of it when I scheduled it initially. So hopefully you're going to be there with us. I will send an updated ICS invite. I did it yesterday. I didn't think of that specific date, so I'll update you soon. All right, so getting started. So right, as you guys know, Azure is pretty global, all over the place, and without a first-class network, we wouldn't be able to offer this first-class cloud. So we're present in so many regions, 34 regions across the globe, and you know our network is, we have 1.6 million miles of fibers in our DCs, which is quite substantial, and our network is the third largest network on the globe. So we are able to connect you guys from wherever you are to wherever you want to go, right? With ExpressRoute is one thing, with over internet is another thing, and we'll be going to be covering a little bit of both of these things today. Now, as you all know, Azure is quite a big platform, has lots of services, and the services we're going to be focusing on today are the ones at the bottom right. We're not going to be talking about all of these guys. We've had some sessions where we might have dug into these things, but we're going to be talking about virtual networks today, ExpressRoute, and a little bit of VPN here. So without further ado, let's just get going here. So the different options to connect to us is essentially, you know, internet connectivity is kind of the base thing. You could spin up a VM or a web service or an Azure website and access it from wherever you are, as long as it has a public endpoint, right? The other option, but that does not necessarily allow you to do a lot of things, right? You can access the service, but you might not be able to work in it, configure it, and develop it. So the next step here typically is point-to-site connectivity, where you can think of that as you're on your workstation in the office and you connect to a VPN, right? You would connect from your workstation in a VPN pretty much the same way as you would connect to your corporate network when you're not necessarily in the corporate office. So this is not typically something that scales a lot, typically used for proof of concepts and just trying it out, kicking the tires, getting your feet wet, seeing a little bit how Azure works and how do I connect there. And the next typical step is for you guys to get site-to-site VPN connectivity, where you would really establish a VPN from your premises to Azure. There's multiple ways to do that. There's different kinds of VPNs, but that's typically the logical next step. And finally, when you need perhaps an SLA, perhaps more bandwidth, typically customers look at using ExpressRoute. All right, so what is ExpressRoute? Well, you've seen this slide a couple times if you've been on the show before. Essentially, it's, you know, you've got your typical road where on the left it's the internet really. It's unpredictable. Might be better than that, different depending on the time of the day. And on the right-hand side, you got like the toll road. Well, there's a fee to pay for it, but it's definitely worth it, right? And that's what you get with ExpressRoute. You get this freeway, and so it really allows you to bypass the internet and perhaps connect ExpressRoute directly to your WAN, as you see on the right hand of that slide. And it can be a node of your WAN, of your MPLS network. There's different ways of connecting there. It doesn't have to be necessarily a node on your WAN, but this is typically one of the ways that customers, many of our customers use. And it's one thing that needs to be clear. It's not always clear in customer conversations that I'm having, at least, is that there needs to be the express route is really a connection between your network and Microsoft's network. It's not a connection from your network to a Microsoft data center. Really, and this happens through a peering location. And we have all these peering locations listed on our websites. There's some all over the U.S., and there's actually 32 or 33, not sure the exact count, on the whole globe. So there's quite a few places where you meet with us. And we often call these meet me locations as well. So even if you're using maybe guys like Megaport that we're going to have talking with us later, or you're using guys like AT&T or other carriers, physically, there is a physical point where these networks are meeting, and these are those points, the points that are listed on our website. So I said earlier 32, 33, I got wrong here. There's 35 of these locations. So essentially, these locations are the ones that we see on the map right now, pretty well distributed on the globe. And depending on where your users are and where your Azure regions that you're going to be using are, you would choose based on that, right? Plus, there's some other regions that are in government cloud or national clouds, as we call them. So there's two of these of these locations that are in China, two of them are in Germany, and four of them are in U.S. to connect to the GovCloud. And we have a global Express Route ecosystem. You see a lot of partners there that connect that allow you to connect to us. And if the partner is not, if your carrier is not listed in there, it absolutely does not mean that you're not able to connect to Express Route. Well, you can use guys like Megaport, who are going to be with us later today, to connect to their facility or have them reach out to you, whichever carrier you're using. So because you don't see our carrier there, does not mean you cannot connect to us. All right, so there's a way to connect to us in all circumstances. Just get in touch with your account team, and we'll put you in contact with the right people. So this is a quick overview of what that is, right? You have three different peerings that we see on the right-hand side, and those peerings are actually sessions, BGP sessions, where we change routing information with you guys. So on the bottom right, you've got this private peering that essentially connects you to your virtual networks, right? So these are private networks that you create inside of Azure. You might be aware, or you might be familiar with this to a certain degree or not, but it's really a private connection from your IP address space all the way up to you. On the middle cloud, on the right middle cloud, you've got those platform services, which are typically things like SQL Azure or storage or websites. There's quite a few of them, and these are normally most of them are with the vast majority of them are addressed with public IP addresses. Some of these PaaS services can be made available inside of virtual networks, and in this case, you would connect to these over the private peering on the bottom right. And finally, on the top, there's the SaaS or Microsoft, as we call it, the Microsoft peering, and this is where you would connect to SaaS applications like CRM Online and Office 365. Although there is a caveat there with Office 365, if you want to do that connection, you need to first have a discussion with your Microsoft account team for that, because we've changed the guidance a couple months ago, and if you've been on these calls already, you probably know about that. So a typical integration scenario that we see with those peerings is the one that there is on the screen, right? Where, as I said a little bit earlier on the bottom right, you've got this blue cloud with your address space or your own networks that you define there, which we call virtual networks. And typically that's, you know, private IP addresses, that's address space that you control. And typically how it's terminated on your network is inside of your network. It might be different. You might have firewalls, you might have extranet firewalls or cloud, you know, you might have some routers and firewalls that you dedicate to cloud providers. But typically, there's a lot of customers who see this as an extension of their data center, put it kind of at the same trust level. And this is one typical topology where if you look at the bottom, the top two clouds, so the green and the red one here, as you connect them back home, a lot of customers instead terminate them logically at the perimeter level. Why? And one of the big reasons is because, first of all, these things are with public IP addresses. So they're not typically accessed in the same way. And you have to see them as at the same kind of security level as the internet, because those services are also accessed from the internet. The router that I have on the top right, where it says traffic can use internet or express route, means what it means, right? So the same traffic can be reaching exactly the same virtual machines or the same services, both over the internet and over express route. So you would probably not bypass your internet firewall to do that. So in the same way, customers usually put a firewall in there and think of it in the same way. So essentially, I've you know, really glanced over that stuff pretty quickly. Feel free to reach out to us if you have more questions, or use the IM. We will answer as best as we can. And there's, you know, of course, there's pricing that goes with this. There's the Microsoft portion of the price, and this is what we have on the screen right now for a standard circuit, where you have different bandwidth, and depending on where the circuit is, the price will change based on that. Also, there's a premium circuit price that is a little bit different, and the premium will give you a little bit more benefits, like the ability to connect from a circuit is say in Chicago to Azure resources that could be anywhere in the world. So they could be in Europe, they could be in Asia. You could leverage that premium circuit for that. So how do you get started? Well, we do have a on our website, on the Express Route pages, there is definitely a workflow that we kind of depicted here a little bit differently, but it contains the same stuff. So, right, the first thing you need to do is you need to understand that a lot of customers sometimes ask us, well, who do we send the PO to? You know, is there like a purchase order process that we need to get Express Route up and running? Well, certainly from your carrier standpoint, there is, and this is something you have to discuss with your carrier. But from the Azure standpoint, it requires an Azure subscription. Express Route is a service in the same kind of way that a virtual machine is a service. Of course, it triggers a whole bunch of different things, but it is a service that's running in Azure. So you got to put this, you got to have the subscription that's valid. You have to, you know, talk to your providers and complete the physical and logical design that you want to put together with them. It will use the PowerShell tool. You'll create the circuit. You'll send the keys to these guys, and then these guys will be able to provision it. And once it's provisioned, you'll be able to fire up the peerings that we talked about earlier. So the private peering, the Azure public peering, as well as the Microsoft peering, if you do enable that peering. So that's a very quick walkthrough of what it is. You can, there's things that you can do in PowerShell. There's things that you can do in the portal. There's one new thing here. You are now able to choose the gateway's queue directly in the portal as you create your gateway. It used to that it was a basic gateway, and because the basic gateway is being deprecated, we've changed the portal and we've added the ability to change and to select the SKU size without you guys having to write PowerShell commands. And I stole this from my predecessor, the cheat sheet. I've renamed it to mine cheat sheet, to my cheat sheet. There's things that you need to think of while you're going to be considering Express Route and connecting and planning to connect to Express Route. And a lot of these things are summarized on that sheet here. So you need to, you know, think about the VLAN that you're going to be using, if you're going to be using, which subnets you're going to be using between your router or your carrier's router and Microsoft's Enterprise Edge router. So you need to think about that. You need to think about the ASN number you're going to be using if you're using peerings with public IP addresses, as well as the addresses that you're going to be advertising to us. So you need to think to get that thinking going on here. And we've also put together a little bit of a checklist that points to a couple documentation we have on our website. It's available at aka.ms/ER checklist, and the updated Office 365 guidance that I've quickly talked about a few minutes ago is available at aka.ms/ERO implementation. And, you know, like pretty much all of these engagements go typically much better when both Microsoft and the partner is involved. So please, if you want to talk and consider Express Route, you need to talk to these guys. Choose the one that might be your partner, or look at other partners depending on what you want to do. And there's a list that's here plus we might have some others on our website, so please feel free to check this out. And with this, I'll turn it over to Richard, who is joining us today as part of the Azure CAT team. So, Richard.
Thanks, Olivier. There was one comment in the chat window about the carrier charges, that, you know, carriers will have their own costs associated with setting up the express route circuit. So I wanted to make sure that we did mention that in the presentation.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And you need to, that's also why in the workflow, one of the things that you want to do as early on as possible is to get these guys involved into your planning, because the charges, depending on how you're configured, could be, you know, vastly different. So there's no way for us to be able to give you even a ballpark idea. These are the guys that control the whole thing, right? So get them involved. Thanks, Richard.
Right. Again, thank you for inviting me to this. We're going to talk about network security groups and how those can be used to control the traffic going inside your VNet and outside the VNet to other destinations. So what is a network security group? Well, it's really an access control list of how I want traffic to flow within my VNet. And for this example here, we have a typical three-tier application architecture. Can everyone see my screen? I want to make sure that everyone's seeing this.
I don't know about everyone, but I can.
There we go. All right. Thank you. Just want to make sure. So you see in this typical three-tier architecture, we have the on-premise environment, we have your back-end environment, your mid-tier, and your front-end application. And what we want to do is control this so that applications, at the mid-tier and back-tier can't get access to the internet, but they can receive information from each of the various environments. And we'll go through a demonstration of this this morning. But you see we have the front-end tier, which can access the internet. And it can access the mid-tier, but it can't access the back-end environment, so that we can prevent, encroachment, or if that front-end happens to get attacked, it can't get to certain other resources within the VNet. It also supports, this allows us to build out DMZs and control not only at the subnet level, but also at the VM or the NIC level. So I can have network security groups that are associated with a single VM or a single NIC in a multi-NIC VM. Right. So again, we're providing segmentation of the VNet to allow us to better control where that traffic goes and where it can't go. And as I said, we can have a DMZ, create a logical DMZ inside of that VNet by saying, here is my entry point through a network virtual appliance. And from there, I can say where that traffic can and can't go to the rest of the VNet, or even from the VNet out to the outside world, whether it's the internet or on-premise. So I can block, certain types of traffic going to my on-premise network. All right, some of the things that are constraints for that VNets or for the network security groups are that they have to be in a regional VNet. I don't know how many folks are using the old affinity groups. If anyone's still using those, we deprecated those. But that's a regional VNet must be used for the NSGs. And we can have only one NSG assigned to a VNet or to a subnet or a virtual machine or a NIC, so that we can have layered network security groups, but we can't have multiple different security groups on the same interface, whether that's a subnet VM or the NIC itself. Now, by default, we can have 100 rules in a given NSG, but if necessary, that can be bumped up to a maximum of 500. And in a subscription, we can only have 100 NSGs out of the box, and if necessary, they can be increased or bumped up to 400 maximum NSGs in a given subscription.
You say 400 or 500? Oh, 400, sorry.
400. Yeah, 400 for the NSG, for the NSGs in this subscription, 500 rules maximum.
Okay, awesome.
Question, can you see the logs from NSG, both loud traffic and block traffic? Not loud traffic, but you can see block traffic. Thanks, Eric. So, rules for NSGs. Again, this is a five-tuple rule or ACL that allows us to say what sources we want to allow, what destinations we want to allow, what protocols we want to allow. And we have a large set of protocols I'll show in the demo of things that we can out-of-the-box define. So I can say I want to allow RDP or I want to allow TCP or HTTP and not have to set up the full sets of work of rules for that. And that is symmetrical, so that if I have an inbound rule, I don't have to define an outbound rule for that same inbound rule.
So the question, yeah. So on Gateway Subnet, as far as I know, you can't apply an NSG, right?
No, you can apply an NSG to the Gateway Subnet.
You can. It is possible to.
Yeah, but you can't connect it to the Gateway itself.
Okay.
So you can have either inbound rules or outbound rules, and they, again, don't have to match those the inbound with the outbound. You have two options. You either allow or you disallow the traffic from that particular rule. So I can have in a set of rules that say allow these protocols, and then a final rule that says block everything. And because it's hierarchical, it will look at those rules first, and if that traffic does not meet any of those previous rules, it will take the final rule, which says block everything, to prevent that traffic from going through. And we'll see that in the demonstrations. One important thing to remember is that this is, if I make a change to an NSG, it takes effect immediately or nearly immediately. I don't have to shut the VMs down or do anything to make that change happen. It happens automatically. So when I make a change, it will flow through the system. It may take upwards of 5 minutes, depending on how big the VNet subnets and everything, to get all propagated out to the full infrastructure, but it happens immediately. And as that change happens, your traffic allowed will change as that is propagated through the infrastructure. So, in a scenario like what we're talking about here, we've got two VMs in a particular subnet. We can apply a set of NSGs against that subnet, but then within that VNet or within that subnet, we can apply rules to a particular VM or even to the NIC, so that, you know, we have a filtering at the outside subnet level, and then within the VM or within the subnet, we have a particular VM that we want to do additional filtering on to prevent specific traffic from getting to that VM. So in this scenario, VM2 is only being filtered by NSG2 and not NSG1, whereas VM1 is being filtered by not only NSG2, but NSG1 as well. And again, that can be inbound.
And Richard, is there an order in which those NSGs are applied for VM1?
Yes, they're applied NSG 2 first, then NSG1.
Okay.
So on inbound. On outbound, it would be NSG1 and then NSG2.
Makes sense.
So you're it depends on how you, which direction the traffic is going in. Thank you.
Okay.
I guess I could build this out. Oh. Sorry. Now we want to go to the demonstration, so let me... Are there any other questions before while I'm switching to the demo?
I didn't see any in the IM that haven't been answered yet. I see here Richard asking how many VNICs are supported per NIC, and how does the number of supported rules are arrived mapped at? I'm not sure what VNICs stands for here.
Virtual NICs are supported per NIC.
And there's also a question from Will Hillis that says, does a blocked log show which NSG blocked it?
It will show the NSG that, yes, the NSG that blocked that or where the NSG that blocked the traffic or what was invoked. Okay. I'll have to look at that because I'm not aware of that. Can everyone see my screen, or is it too?
I can.
Is it too small?
We see the Windows logo right now. The
big
Windows logo.
Let me get my. All right, thank you, Elliot. I'll look into that. So is that too small, or is that?
That's perfect. It might even be big, but if you can do your stuff on that, that's awesome. We see very well.
All right, so what we have here, let me go to my resources. So I have a number of resources. I have a virtual network, which has three tiers that I'm working with: the web tier, app tier, and database tier. And in each of these tiers, if we look, I have a network security group, which is a default. But I also have a set of network security groups or rules for each of the tiers. And the default tier is basically only allow So I'm allowing Internet RDP, I'm allowing all RDP to come in from the Internet, and I'm allowing all internal traffic to travel between any of the VNets or any of the subnets in the VNet. And then I have a final deny all, which says any other traffic coming from anywhere else, we're going to deny that. And when you look at... let's just look at one of these, the deny all here. As you can see, we have a name, the priority. Priority is how that rule is applied to secure. We have a priority 100, 200, 4,000. And that again says I'm going to apply these in order, with 4,000 being my last priority that I'm going to apply. And again, you want to put something like this deny all as the highest numbered priority, so that it is the last thing that gets applied. Because if I were to apply that at say 100, then I would lose my internal connectivity between my different subnets. So again, I can have a source of any, or I can set a specific address for that, or I can use a tag as my definition. And you can see for a tag, we have internet, virtual networks, and then load balancer. So these are things that I can apply against the security network security group to filter where that traffic is coming from and where it's going to. Then the protocols, as we mentioned before, we've got a large swath of predefined protocols that we can do in a simple otherwise I can go into a custom and I can say the port ranges and what actions I want to do, whether it's deny or apply or allow that traffic to go through. Discard this.
And Richard, there was a question from Dan Boyle asking if, saying that he can't ping from machine to machine within the VNet. That would be possible, I guess, if you would put, if you would have a rule allowing all protocols to talk, right?
Right. Well, ping is special. Let me.
And the, your host firewalls also have to make sure that they do leave that traffic pass, which is like super critical. Now, this is small, Richard.
Yeah, I know. I didn't set these. I wasn't planning on going into command prompt.
And that'll be better.
If that's any better. Because I don't have anything customized here. This is a very out of the box. Yeah, I don't believe ICMP is allowed through the switches, the virtual network switches. But again, I did not set this up. The firewall is the default for the firewall. But I do want to come here anyway because I need time to for the network to propagate. So this is kind of a good spot to test here. So this is my database tier. Okay, so we're able to get into the database tier. So this is, I can do this without. So we have our 132, which is our database server coming from this, from the web tier application. So let me now break or disconnect from that. And now I want to go into the and the question about the that scrolled up here the deny all that is more of a visual cue. As opposed to default, to for me, I use that as a visual cue to know what it is I'm trying to do in the security in the rules. As opposed to taking the default of deny all, I want to know what I'm defining so that I define that I can go back and quickly look and see what I'm trying to do with that security rule. So back at the VNet in subnets, what I want to do is go to the database tier, and I want to change from the default rule to the database rule. And I want to save that so that it starts propagating through the network, so that by the time I'm ready to prove that the security rule in NSG has been applied, it's had time to propagate through the system. All right, so let's go back to the, while that's doing its thing, let's go back to the DBNSG. So again, I have inbound apply all RDP from the application tier, but not the web tier. And then again, I'm allowing the RDP so I can get to the machine from the internet. And again, then I'm denying all for everything else, so that any traffic from anywhere is not allowed to reach that subnet. And in this case, I'm not defining any outbound rules. So I have, let's see. Been saved. Let's see, what other questions are out here? I don't think it's ready. Let me spin up. See if it's propagated yet. Okay. So it's now, and the rule is propagated. And we can no longer, from the web tier, access that machine. But if I go to the app tier, I can still get there. So now I'm back into the DB. So from the app tier, I'm able to reach either the DB or the web tier, but I can't, from the web tier, reach the DB tier. And if I were to fill out that full scenario in my VNet, I would apply all of my rules instead of the default rules that are currently being applied. And there it goes, finally. So we replace the things. Other questions? So that's it for my demo.
All right. So thank you, Richard. We'll pass control over to David, who is joining us from Megaport. David, can you do you want to present your screen? Do you want to share the your screen? How do you want to go about it?
Yeah. Hi, Olivier.
Hi.
I can go ahead and share my screen, or we can jump back into the presentation. I think I saw some content there already.
Yeah, the content is there. So let me just go back and display the presentation.
Fantastic.
It should be displayed soon.
Yeah, I can see it.
Okay, thanks. So thanks a lot, Richard. Now, if you want to, do you want to take over the control of as a presenter?
Yeah, that would be great.
Perfect.
Okay, so thanks so much, Olivier, and thanks everyone for the opportunity to come on the call today. I know we've got only about 15 minutes left here in the hour, but we'll try to speed through the content that I have on the slides and make best use of our time. What we'll do is go through the slides real quickly, and then we'll do a quick demo of our web-based portal and show everyone how we create express route circuits in real time using our API-based portal. My name is David McCullough. I look after our cloud strategy in North America. I'm joined on the call today with Misha Citrone, Solutions Architect, and he'll be supporting the demo right after we go through the content here. If there's any questions along the way, just drop them in the chat, and we'll try to address them as we go. So what is Megaport? Megaport is a three, maybe four-year-old company now that specializes in elastic interconnection for cloud environments. One of our developers kind of coined this phrase, and I like it, but basically we're a software company that happens to own and operate a layer two purpose-built network. And so what that means, in reality, if you look at our stack here in this graphic, is that we have our own network, our own layer two network that we've built globally. In the network, we mostly have Brocade and Juniper devices, but above that are the agents and database layer, and of course our API and web and mobile applications. That's really where the secret sauce of what we do comes into play. You know, it's one thing to have a layer two network. It's another thing to programmatically automate the spinning up of VLANs into different Azure environments. So why do we do this? The enterprise customers that we work with typically don't live in the same data center facilities that the cloud providers live in. So we saw a huge need years ago to create an ecosystem and a network that would allow the enterprise to extend their network into different cloud environments in different regions globally. So by using a single Megaport, you can extend connections, and these are just layer two VLANs off of our network or off of the customer's network into different environments. And these could be Azure environments. These could be other partners. These could be other things in terms of applications or services that an enterprise customer wants to consume. Today, we have about 160 points of presence globally. All of our currently enabled locations can be found at megaport.com/locations. There are some locations that are currently being built. Those won't be reflected there. So what makes us different? There's a lot of choices when it comes to express route partners, but the three or four things that make Megaport really different than anyone else is the fact that we have no long-term contracts. So this means that you have the same pay-as-you-go model for network that you do for compute and storage. So we have flexible terms and the flexibility to let customers spin up connections, VXCs, within minutes across our fabric without any long-term contractual commitment. So if you've got multiple workloads in multiple types of environments, whether it's test, dev, or production, you can spin up connections into these environments quickly and easily and pay as you go for that connectivity. How we do this via software-defined networking is through our customer-managed web-based portal and our API. Again, it's important to note that we give complete control to the customer to self-provision VXCs, and VXCs are simply Layer 2 VLANs. We call them virtual cross-connects, to different Azure environments. If a customer needs to increase bandwidth at any time, they can simply go into the portal and dial that bandwidth up on a per meg basis as needed for different types of environments. A couple other things to note, we are data center and carrier agnostic, so that means that we live in a variety of data center facilities globally. So we're in a variety of Equinix facilities, CyrusOne, Internap, CoreSite, Mega Ice, Global Switch. You know, the list really goes on, but we're in a bunch of facilities globally. We also are carrier agnostic, so how a customer extends their WAN environment to us is entirely up to the customer. If they're not co-located in the same data center that we're in, we simply look to them to extend their network to us at Layer 2, or we provide some guidance on how best to do that. This next slide is a little bit of an eye chart, so I apologize, but I think it's quite helpful. This demonstrates how a customer creates an NNI with us at the physical layer. So off to the left-hand side, you see a customer router switch. This is a Layer 2 capable device, and there a customer is physically cross-connecting to either a 1 gig or a 10 gig port into our network. And from that point on, this is again where the magic happens. We're able to spin up VXCs, virtual cross-connects, to different environments within minutes across our fabric, across our network, to different Azure environments and to other destinations. We support public and private peering across a single VLAN. Those VLANs, again, are Layer 2 VLANs. So in terms of supporting Q&Q and 802.1 trunking, we certainly support that across our network as well.
And David, you've got a question from Will Hillis, who says, would I colo equipment in your DC?
No, there's no need to have equipment in one of our POPs. If, of course, if you're in one of our POPs already, you can simply use a fiber cross connect to get to us. But if you're outside of one of the POPs, then we would look to work with your carrier to extend a circuit to us at Layer 2 and then order a cross connect to our equipment in that POP. But no, you don't have to have equipment in any of our POPs to do this. This is a quick visual representation of where we have Azure Express Route on-ramps today in the U.S. I won't spend a lot of time here, but I think it's important to note that we are in most locations today in the U.S., APAC, and we've also recently expanded into Europe. I'm just going to click through these in the interest of time. So let's touch on a couple recent announcements that I think are important for everyone to hear. We recently announced a partnership with DRT, that's Digital Realty Trust. They're one of the world's largest real estate investment trusts and data center owner operators. We just announced a partnership with them whereby they are white labeling our portal and using our API to help automate connectivity for their customers in their facilities. We also are the first native express route provider in Switch in Las Vegas, which has been absolutely fantastic. We have a lot of new customers using us now for express route out of that facility or in the metro area there. We're currently deploying express route this month in Quebec City and Toronto, and our newest express route locations are coming here very shortly for Azure GovCloud, Chicago, and London and Amsterdam as well. And here's a little detail on our DRT partnership. I'm just going to click through this and talk just a second about our expansion in Europe. So we've organically grown historically in most regions globally. We've built our own network. We've built we deployed our own kit in a variety of POPs globally, in APAC and North America specifically. And then we also did the same thing in Europe, but what we did a little differently in Europe is we acquired two companies called eKix and Omnix to extend our network reach overnight. So now we have something in the order of, Olivier's head's in the way of my total number, but I think it says around 47 locations in Europe. And again, we have about 160 POPs globally where customers can interconnect with us. So that being said, it is demo time. We're going to jump into the portal, and I'm going to pass the ball off to Misha, who's going to run us through a demo. And I see a question in the chat here. Any plans for Western Europe? So if we go back to this slide real quick, you'll see that our current points of presence in Western Europe are currently in Ireland and London for the most part. And then we've got a bit of connectivity in Amsterdam, Frankfurt, and in Luxembourg down here. So I don't know if that's helpful to you. If there's a specific location that you're interested in, maybe drop it into the chat, and I can see if it's in currently with our deployment team or if we have any plans to expand there. And I'll get back to you, Pedro. Okay. Olivier, I'd like to pass this off to Misha. Can you maybe assist with that? I know we've only got a few minutes left here.
Yeah, we're going to have to make that really quick. Misha, can you actually share your screen?
Yep.
Awesome.
Can everybody, and thank you, Olivier, and thanks, David. Hey, everyone. I'm Misha Citron. I'm a solutions architect for Megaport North America. I'm going to really try to make this short and sweet. I've got about 5 minutes to package this together. So, you know, just a couple additional key items about Megaport. So an enterprise customer has the ability to utilize any one of our on-ramp locations with Azure, regardless of where their actual access Megaport lives within our data centers. And we 100% support the SLA recommendations from Microsoft. So we have primary and secondary connectivity from all of our locations. And once I go over that within our portal, you'll be able to see both the primary and secondary will populate. And, you know, we're going to dive right into the portal, and I'll quickly show you how we can create an express route for both public and private peering connectivity. So I'm assuming, can everybody see my screen now that I took over as presenter?
Well, we see the deck with the Europe map.
Okay, let's see here. Let me see if I can go ahead and share my screen.
It is loading.
Okay, perfect.
There, it is there.
Okay, great. So essentially, if you were to go to megaport.com, you can easily just sign up and register to get comfortable with the look and feel of our portal. I highly encourage that. You don't have to deploy any services, but get familiar with what our portal looks like. So that's at megaport.al, aka Megaportal. Once you're within the homepage, it's going to default to the dashboard view. This is where essentially a Megaport would live. This is going to be your access port within the data center that you would physically cross connect to us. Okay, so it's a self-service portal. You have the ability to provision pretty much the entire VLAN range to create these VXCs, these virtual services, as David mentioned, to point them at to Microsoft Azure. So I have a couple of Megaports already created just to save us 3 minutes of time. I essentially could go into my console with my Microsoft Azure account, which I'm already in. This is my home page. And underneath my dashboard, I can go under Express Route Circuits. Okay, I have two that already exist today. One of them I have pointing in Las Vegas. One of them I have pointing at Washington, D.C. We are a provider, so once you actually go and try to add the connectivity to create an express route, you would choose us underneath the drop-down as the actual provider. Megaport, you would specify your peering location. You could go across the globe. I'm going to focus specifically on North America. So I could essentially pick Las Vegas, which is one of our most recent locations. I would then specify my bandwidth. I'm going to start with a 50 meg. I will label this as ER1 for Express Route 1. And then I'm going to do metered for this example. I can scroll down and create a new resource group, okay? So I'm just going to do RG new. And then under here, I'm actually going to specify this since it's in Las Vegas. Let's get it under, it's actually going to be under Central US. So that's perfect. So I believe I have everything filled out. I can now create this, allow it to validate, and then deploy. Okay, this is going to take a few minutes, so I'm going to piggyback and use one that I've already created. While that one is starting to be deployed, it would be the same process. What you would do is you want to obtain this service key. The service key you can copy and paste, and that is all that we need from the Megaport platform perspective to actually enable the available data centers where you can do a primary and a secondary connection for your peering between your equipment and Azure. Okay, so then I can take that and I can use this one. This is my initials. It's 10 gig megaport. Today you can create them either at the 1 gig or 10 gig rate. And this is for LVS Las Vegas coming out of Switch SuperNAS data center. I can click on connection. I can then click on VXC to cloud. I can select Azure and I can go ahead and put my key in here, which will automatically populate my target locations for full redundancy. I can do a primary and a secondary utilizing this same key for both connections. Now, each one of these are going to be a separate VXC, so that's virtual pipe, if you will, that VLAN tag instance within Megaport, and we're transparently passing that layer 3 information for your equipment to peer directly with Azure. So I can select this. I've got less than a minute. I can provide a naming convention. I've got the 50 meg rate limit that automatically populates based off of what I specified in Azure's portal. And then I can apply VLAN tag. I can say I'm going to use VLAN 105, for example. And then I would hit add to cart. So I know we just hit we just stopped on a hard break on hitting by the hour. But that's essentially all I would need to do. I could add this to cart and then deploy it. And once it's provisioned, it's going to show up as a provider status of being fully provisioned. I can enable my private, my public, or even my Microsoft Office 365 public peering connectivity, all within Azure based off of my Megaport account. So try to keep that in 5 minutes. By all means, if you have any questions, please reach out to David and I. We can provide our contact information and walk you through any additional info. Thank you.
Excellent. So thanks so much, Misha. Thanks so much, David and Richard. It was very, very helpful. Sorry we kind of ran a little bit out of time there at the top of the hour, but hopefully everyone, if you do have questions, feel free to reach out to your Microsoft account team or to us, and we'll certainly be glad to help you out. So I'm hoping you guys all have a great weekend, and remember the next webinar is going to be on December 2nd and not November 25th. So have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.